The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, it is time to talk some college football, and we are going to highlight the winners and the losers from National Signing Day. And once again, the familiar powerhouses struck gold on Wednesday. Of course, we're talking about out of the SEC, Florida, Alabama, Ole Miss. They did very, very well. But the first conference we are going to focus on is the Big Ten Conference, because over the past couple of years, it seems like every time Jason Peter's on our show, we're talking about how the Big Ten Conference has underachieved and they are looking to get back on track. So it's always a pleasure to welcome into our program the great Jason Peter from the University of Nebraska. And Jason, I'm sure you are all smiles. As I understand, the Huskers did extremely well on National Signing Day. In fact, they signed 26 to the team, and it wasn't right there in the great state of Nebraska, from 13 different states.
Well, I usually hide in my bomb shelter for the last few days of college recruiting, and I usually come out the day after, which is today, so it fits perfectly. But I'm not the biggest fan of the coverage, I guess, of recruiting. Recruiting obviously is a big part of college football. It's its own season now, I think, and you have some people that follow the recruiting just as much as they do the college football season, because it gives fans a sense of hope that maybe we fell short this year, but with player X and player Y and player Z that are coming in, these are the guys that are going to get us over that hump. And there hasn't been a school, I think, that has kind of lived with that mindset more than Nebraska has, just because they've been really shut out of any type of national relevance, any type of BCS type game, national championship type game. It's been since I guess the 2001 national championship game against Miami. That was the last time Nebraska played on a national stage like that, and ever since then it's kind of been trying to get back to those glory years. And for whatever the reason, Bill Callahan, he was a guy who, I guess, wanted to prove everybody wrong and say you can recruit to Nebraska. They have facilities, they have everything you need in order to win big football games, to move on to the next level and play in the NFL, if those are dreams of 17-year-old kids. And he did a lot of things wrong, I'll say, in his time here at Nebraska, but he was able to recruit. And up to this point, Bo Pelini's best years have come with Bill Callahan's players that were left over. And Bo Pelini's been... He's struggled, I think, since he's gotten here to find the players that he needs to go out and execute his game plans. This with the new class that signed, 26 of them, like you said, it gives everybody this sense of hope. But I also think that there's a large part of the fan base that says, well, we've kind of heard this whole story, and we need to see it out on the field. Because all this recruiting does is it builds up our expectations, because you've got, this four-star guy, or this, the best running back in California, or this defensive lineman, and ultimately there's, no production on the field. And I think that's partly why I'm not a huge fan of the recruiting services, because they build these kids up. There's such expectations on these kids, and they're not allowed to go, or they're not allowed to develop kind of at their own rate. Certainly everybody's got a clock that starts ticking once you get here on campus, and you've got, 4 or 5 years until you're walking out the door. So there is a time frame, but, some guys can come in and contribute as freshmen. Other guys, they need to redshirt. They need to take 2-3 years before they finally come into their own, where they can go out and be productive on the field. But lots of times when they're kind of kicking these guys out onto the field, and you know, you're talking about 17, 18-year-old kids, they all think, you know, they're the best player in the world. They all think that they should play as true freshmen. You know, but the reality is there's only a handful of them that actually should be out there, and sometimes you do more damage to them than good by playing them early, because they can just go out there and it's like being shell-shocked and they never recover from it. So recruiting's a funny game.
We are recapping the National Signing Day with Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. We're focusing right now on the Big Ten Conference. Hopefully we'll have enough time. We'll talk about the Big 12 class rankings. But when you really start looking at the numbers, I mean, it is good news for Bo Pelini. As you had said, you know, he's used many of Bill Callahan's recruits from the past in order to be able to move the program forward. But right now, if you look at things, I mean, they signed 12 players on offense, 13 on defense, and many of those players earned ratings of 4 stars on the 5-star scale. And this class, what, ranked from 11th to 23rd. How would you assess this class when you start looking at the talent that is coming in? And will they be immediate contributors?
A lot of people think this could be Bo's best class that he signed. And I don't know if you can ever really judge a class till maybe 3 years after all of them have gotten on campus. You never know. There's always guys that are transferring. And Nebraska's had two, actually, that just transferred the other day. Is Chase Rome, who we talked about earlier in the year, who had left the team maybe after the UCLA game. I think he had quit the team, and Bo let him back on. And he played quite a bit just because they were so thin at defensive line. He has left the team, I think, for good. And Braylon Hurd, who was a 4- or 5-star type running back kid that he was about third on the depth chart, a really nice running back, just wasn't a lot of room for him to get carries. He left as well. I guess the door is still open for him to return, but you know, this is kind of where then the recruiting comes back in, because now you're saying, well, you know, player X from high school in California, he can come in and he can contribute here. But I think, you know, the general feeling is that Nebraska kind of finished with the third best class in the Big Ten, and that Ohio State and Michigan finished fairly ahead of Nebraska, but Nebraska finished kind of in a safe third spot. And look, Nebraska was never a school that you know, signed the top five classes year in, year out. I mean, you know, look back at the teams that won championships under Tom Osborne. We never had a top recruiting class in the top 20, and we won 3 national championships. You know, so that's kind of, you know, the experts for you. You just never know how a kid will develop, but I think Bo is pleased. He had to go out. He had to find defensive linemen. And whether or not they got the guys that they truly wanted, I think they were hoping more for a couple of the top junior college defensive tackles, just because Nebraska was really bad on the defensive line, and even worse at defensive tackle, that they needed some immediate help. And, you know, anytime you go junior college ranks, you're rolling the dice there, because there's usually a reason why some of those kids end up at junior college, whether it be an attitude thing, a grade thing. Something's just not right sometimes. And not to say all of them are that way, but there's usually a reason. They really only got one kid, Randy Gregory, and he's more of a defensive end type of guy. So they got a couple of defensive tackles that will be freshmen. I just, you know, I think if there's one position that if you could pick out of all the positions on the field that would say that's the hardest spot to contribute as a true freshman, I would probably, I think most coaches would probably say defensive tackle, because you just have to be, high school strong doesn't cut it. You know, when you get to that next level in college and you're playing with the big boys and everything's just moving that much faster, and it really is a difficult position for young guys to have a lot of success at. You just don't see it very often. But they went out and they signed, like I said, six defensive linemen. And whether or not any of them will help immediately, that remains to be seen. Like I said, losing Chase Rome already hurts what was a very thin, weak defensive line. So Bo, he's got his work cut out for him this year.
Okay, Jason, you talk about the defensive linemen that perhaps that they have signed, but did they strengthen themselves at the quarterback position, of course, because the Huskers lose their three-year starter in Taylor Martinez after this coming season?
Yeah, well, they're thrilled with the guy that they got. And I think he probably would have been much higher on everybody's recruiting board if he hadn't had a major knee injury at the beginning of the high school seasons. Johnny Stanton, a kid out of California who went and he was in that Elite 11. And I believe he won the Elite 11 competition. And I remember Trent Dilfer was doing some analysis type work, and he was, you know, through the roof raving about Johnny Stanton. And you know, I think his ultimate school was maybe Stanford, you know, going into this whole recruiting process. But once he blew his ACL, I think a lot of schools dropped off, but Nebraska stuck with him. And, you know, it remains to be seen. I think major knee injuries like he had, the way that schools or NFL teams look at them nowadays, it's not the same as it was 5-10 years ago. 5-10 years ago, people didn't know if you were going to come back from it. Now you have guys like Adrian Peterson who are winning MVPs of the National Football League after, 6 months on the rehab table. So it's amazing kind of what modern medicine has done. And Johnny Stanton, from everything that we've heard, he's ahead of the process here, and he'll be ready to go. I don't know if they'll throw him right into the fire in full contact once he gets here, but at some point in the year, you know, he'll be ready to go. And you know, the fortunate thing for him is I don't think anybody is expecting him this year to try to win the starting job. Like you said, you have Taylor Martinez coming back for his senior year, and you know, you can kind of just take that watch and learn type perspective. And I think lots of times with quarterbacks, that's the best way. Just kind of let them sit there and see how the game works and how everything unfolds and how, you know, the starter runs the huddle and how, you know, just all the intangibles that go along with being a Division I quarterback.
Well, I know Bo Pelini, the head coach, of course, is very excited in terms of, it seems like you guys have a lot more depth at the quarterback position, but you were just talking about Taylor Martinez after this season that I understand his brother is coming to Nebraska too, is that right?
Yes, he is more of a safety outside linebacker. He's from Laguna Beach High School in California, which, you know, it's difficult to judge. That's why I have such problems with the recruiting, the grades that are handed out. It's just that there's so much inconsistency in the level of competition that these kids are playing against in high school. And, you know, the Taylor Martinez's brother, even though he was a running back and a safety at Laguna Beach High School, he was bigger than, I think, every defensive and offensive lineman that they had, and bigger than most of the other players that were out on the field. So I think that says a lot about kind of, you know, the level of competition. But he, from everything that we've seen and heard, he's, you know, an athlete. He's like his brother Taylor. He's fast. He can run. You know, it will just kind of depend on how he develops once he gets here. But I know for myself, having you know, choosing a school where your brother's at, and being able to have kind of that family support there, I know it played major dividends in my success here at Nebraska, and hopefully it does for Taylor's brother.
We're talking to Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. If you're just dialing in, of course, he was a three-time national champion at the University of Nebraska, had a very successful career in the NFL as well. And right now we are talking about the Big Ten Conference. Everybody else seems to be focusing on the SEC and the Big 12. But of course, at the top of the Big Ten, when you reflect on and recap National Signing Day, was Ohio State. And it seems like, you know, Urban Meyer, he doesn't have as easy as he did, you know, in the South down in Florida and everything, but he was able to secure and ink some players that were being heavily courted from Alabama and Tennessee, Von Bell, and then four-star recruit James Clark.
Yeah, and I know Nebraska fans aren't, they're not sleeping any better knowing the type of kids that Urban is bringing to Columbus. You know, here you have a national championship winning coach, and he goes undefeated in his first year at Ohio State, and you know, Nebraska's got to get through Ohio State, you know, in order to be relevant in the national picture. And it's not getting any easier when he's bringing in top players from around the country. And he's obviously a coach that knows how to coach up these kids, because he's done it before. He's got the track record. And you know, for as bad as it, you know, may seem for Nebraska and other fan bases in the Big Ten, this is something I think that you got to look at as a positive, because he is helping put the Big Ten back into that national conversation. You know, it's been a long time since the Big Ten has been relevant, and now you have Urban Meyer leading the Buckeyes, and you know, they certainly would have been in the conversation last year if they hadn't been on probation. And I just think it can't do any bad for the Big Ten having a head coach like Urban Meyer leading one of your divisional schools, and having good football players, because other good football players want to go where the competition is good or where their teammates are good. So you know, it's something I think that everybody is fighting against the SEC, because they're hands down, they're the premier conference in college football. You know, the national championships alone in the last 7 years are proof to that. And it's kind of the SEC's world, and everybody else is just kind of living in it, and it's not going to change unless you start, other conferences start winning championships. And you know, I don't know if it's the gap's getting bigger or it's getting smaller, because now you have Chip Kelly, who has left Oregon, and you know, they, I think, finish out of the top 20 in recruiting this year. You know, how will things remain out there? Lane Kiffin, USC, was usually the biggest threat to the SEC and winning a championship. You know, what did they do? They're finishing out of the top 10 this year, where Pete Carroll normally had them, you know, either at 1 or 2 or 3, somewhere there. You have Texas, you have Oklahoma that have finished now outside of the top 10. And, you know, you got schools like Notre Dame now that has always been nationally relevant just because they're Notre Dame, but now they, you know, have a year where, hey, we played in the national championship, so now it's going to be even easier for Notre Dame. You have surprise teams like Ole Miss. I mean, Ole Miss
was huge.
3 players, I think, who were number 1 at their position,
right,
and they finish in the top 5. Brady Hoke, you know, has Michigan back in the conversation. You know, and Johnny Manziel, what he has done for Texas A&M, and Kevin Sumlin. I mean, they're finishing now in the top 10, where it was just a year ago, prior to the season, where people thought, Texas A&M and Missouri, they're going to finish at the bottom of the SEC every year. And that may hold true for Missouri, but Texas A&M is not standing there just saying, all right, well, whatever you say, we'll finish at the bottom. I mean, this is a team that's going to be in the hunt for a national championship next year.
Yeah, Texas A&M, what an incredible renaissance turnaround that has happened down there, and certainly looking forward to covering that program. One of the things, since we're talking about the Big Ten Conference, you know, you look at Ohio State, we were just talking about 5-star recruit Von Bell now inking with Ohio State. We've already highlighted and talked about Nebraska, but what about I think of head coach Kevin Wilson with Indiana. Of course, I remember him well at Oklahoma, but he's brought in more four-star recruits in this class alone than any of his predecessors did in the previous 11 seasons. I mean, he's really doing some great things in Bloomington.
Yeah, and, you know, it's kind of one of those things where you gotta get them there first. You know, before you get a chance to coach those guys, you got to get them there. And, you know, that's half the battle. I think in being a successful program nowadays, you know, whether or not there's more of a talent pool to pick from because maybe there's more kids that are playing now or more kids that are dedicated to improving, I think, maybe their game at a younger age. I think, you know, certainly everything when you talk about the NFL being as big as it is, everything kind of trickles down. And now, you know, with the amount of money that guys are making in the NFL, I think that trickles all the way down to, you know, high school players, and they're looking at that saying, well, this is what I want to do from, you know, the rest of my life, and now I'm going to work towards that. And, you know, that never even registered in my head as I was trying to pick a school. So I think there's more, maybe, more guys that are maybe more dedicated. I don't know if I'm putting it the right way. But anyway, Kevin Wilson has, he's gone out there and you know, you're seeing it, like I said, with other schools like Ole Miss and UCLA and these schools maybe that don't have the best tradition of winning. And, you know, they're finding their little niche. They're finding, you know, their way of communicating and building relationships with these high school kids. And they're building enough trust in these kids that they're getting some of these kids to take risks. I mean, because they're not going to the perennial powers. They're saying, I'll go to an Ole Miss. I'll go to an Indiana. I'll go to a Boise State because, you know, I can have success there. And I think, you know, proximity to home, I think, plays a part, obviously. Some of these guys, they have older brothers that are already on maybe a roster, so they choose to go to school for that reason. And let's face it, you know, 10, 15 years ago, if you wanted to be on TV 5, 6, 7 times, you had to go to a Nebraska. You had to go to an Oklahoma. You had to go to a Miami. Nowadays, you can go to Indiana, and 13 of your games will be on TV. There's pretty much not a football game out there that isn't broadcast so that your parents and your friends and everybody else can see it. So it really does come down to, I think, a comfort thing where guys feel most at home, or they feel like the relationship that they had with that assistant coach is the best situation for them.
Well, college recruiting, it has come a long ways, and it has certainly changed. You're not that far removed from the game, Jason, and just, you know, I'm being kind, just how much it has evolved over the past few years. Hey, just a few more minutes with Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment, and we do want to take time. Quickly, Jason, what was your impression? What did you think about Super Bowl 47? How about that blackout, and did that ever happen to you? You ever had a blackout you've had to deal with?
We did.
Really?
97. We were playing in Lawrence, Kansas, and I think the beatdown was probably just as bad as what Baltimore was putting on San Francisco, except it wasn't indoors. Like I said, it was in Lawrence, and it was one of the coldest nights of the year. That was kind of when we used to have cold weather during football season. It doesn't seem like we have that anymore, but it was bitter cold, and the lights just went out, and I think it was sometime maybe in the second half, and I think Coach Osborne went out there and said, hey, look, you know, there's enough light out here, we'll continue to play. I think he just wanted to get back on the bus and get home, but they were able to get him back up and running, and we finished the game. But I don't think it lasted 33 minutes or however long it did at the Superdome.
It completely changed the momentum in that particular game. But listen, we've only got about 60 seconds left. One thing I want to ask you is, what did you enjoy the most about the Super Bowl besides halftime and Beyonce?
That was a show as well, but I don't know exactly. I think maybe just how the blackout affected. I mean, the thing that I think shocked me the most, and we talked about the offensive staff a little bit, or the staff for Jim Harbaugh, and was the play calling down at the end for San Francisco. I thought they did such a good job in coming back, and that's kind of the way that San Fran had operated the last few weeks of the season was, teams were scoring points on their defense, but they were finding a way in the second half, and they were coming back and winning. But down at the end there, and, you're inside the five, and you throw three straight plays of pass plays, and the last play to Michael Crabtree, the fade, corner route there, it had to be such a perfect ball that had to be thrown for that to be successful, and it just didn't give much room for error. And I just thought there was so many other things you could have run. I mean, run a kind of a naked boot and let them have the option of throwing it or running it. Just see how the play plays out. I just think there were other things you could have done. And I know it's, hindsight's 20/20, but I think you're going to see San Francisco in these games for years to come. I think they've got a bright future.
It was a great Super Bowl. There's no doubt about that. Listen, Jason, we didn't get a chance to talk about the Big 12 conference and the class rankings and how everything shook out on National Signing Day. Let's definitely delve into that next week and among other topics as well. Okay, Jason, you take care.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. Join us online right now at eradiosports.com.